Spectrum for Wednesday, August 29th. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. We're going to get right to it today. Join us live in the studio, our legal director, Joshua Tom, staff attorney, Landon Timms, and director of communications and advocacy, Zakiya Summers Harley, all with the ACLU of Mississippi. Welcome to you all.
Thank you for having us, Dwayne.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's start with this. You guys have a lot on your plate, so I'm going to start with this one. You guys sent out a release yesterday saying the headline here, the ACLU of Mississippi calls for an end to unconstitutional ban on asking for donations in 16 cities. Talk to us about that.
So, Dwayne, this is Joshua Tom.
Speak a little. Pull that mic a little closer to your... To you. Go ahead, Joshua.
This is Joshua, the legal director. So we sent a letter that you just mentioned to 16 cities and towns in Mississippi. The letter actually applies and should put all towns and cities in Mississippi on notice, though, that, you know, these anti-panhandling, which are basically anti-begging ordinances, are not only bad policy, but they're also unconstitutional.
And the courts have already decided this? The Supreme Court?
Yes, the Supreme Court has a decision from 2015. It's called Reed versus Town of Gilbert. That's not directly on panhandling, but every panhandling ordinance that's been challenged since Reed was decided, which is 25 out of 25, has been struck down as unconstitutional.
I have to say, I was born and raised in Chicago. I lived in New York for 20 years, so I am used to panhandlers. I think as the homeless situation has grown across the country, you see more people around the country panhandling, and I don't think it has been as common down here. You guys are obviously approaching it as a legal matter. Are you finding that the courts down here look at this issue differently because it has not been as prevalent here?
Well, it's our opinion that, you know, whether it's in Mississippi or, you know, any state in the country, because our letter was coordinated with 18 other organizations in 12 states, which actually target 240 similar ordinances across the country. And we all argue that the same law applies and these anti-panhandling ordinances are unconstitutional and, again, bad policy.
And this is really blowing up a little bit in California, too, which had been really lenient. I know in San Francisco especially, they had tent cities, and all of a sudden they changed their policy, and they're very anti-homeless right now. Or that may not be fair, but they're trying to get more people off of the street. I'm sure they have a lot of services that they provide. Is this trend... do you see this reversing around the country?
Well, so, you know, I think that what you mentioned in California is, you know, possibly just trying to sweep the problem underneath the rug, you know, shooing people away, which is not dealing with the sources of homelessness and the sources of the reasons that people need to ask for money. And so an anti-panhandling ordinance really just, you know, tries to make it, you know, cosmetically go away, whereas what needs to happen is the sources of homelessness need to be addressed, such as providing shelter and providing services to homeless people and indigent people.
In this release, it says that you demand that they stop. Could you clarify that language for me? What options do you have in terms of asking? You're demanding that the city stop cracking down on panhandling, and then I guess that implicit in this is that you will file a suit or take them to court?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things that I definitely want to get out on speaking with you, Dwayne, is anybody, whether you or someone you know who's been affected by one of these anti-panhandling ordinances, please reach out to us at the ACLU of Mississippi. We'd love to hear from you. And I think you're definitely reading that correctly. In that, you know, quote, demand letter, there is an implicit threat of a lawsuit should, you know, cities not voluntarily do the right thing.
And how clear is this in the law? Do you believe that the courts will recognize that this is, if not settled law, you say it's settled law, though. So do you think the courts here will recognize that it's settled law?
You know, nothing's for sure when it comes to a lawsuit, but I think that this particular issue is about as safe as a bet as it gets with that these laws are unconstitutional.
And how did you choose the 16 cities that you decided to target?
You know, we sort of focused on some of the larger jurisdictions in Mississippi. You know, we didn't want to have to send out, you know, say 50 or 100, which possibly we could have done. So the 16 was sort of more of an arbitrary number, but it focused on some of the larger cities in Mississippi.
I see Jackson's on here. Should I be surprised that Jackson's on here? I know the mayor here is more, so to speak, a champion of the people. Should I be surprised that that Jackson's on here?
Well, so, you know, some of these ordinances have been passed in decades past. And so off the top of my head, I'm not actually sure when Jackson's was passed. But, you know, given Mayor Lumumba's progressive policies and progressive outlook, you know, we would hope that he would be open to working with us to repeal Jackson's ordinance, which I think would be in line with his outlook.
And so listeners know, some of the other cities on the list, or the other cities on the list, are, along with Jackson, Gulfport, South Haven, Meridian, Greenville, Olive Branch, Horn Lake, Clinton, Ridgeland, Starkville, Vicksburg, Pascagoula, Brandon, Clarksdale, Natchez, and Greenwood. So talk to me about how this will work now. You sent out this letter yesterday?
We did, yes.
Okay, and then how long do you wait, or who would you hear from in response to the letter?
You know, in the letter we said, we addressed it to the mayors of each of those cities you just listed, and we said that we'd like a response by September 11th, which was 2 weeks from yesterday. We've actually already heard from two mayors, and the mayor of Starkville has already expressed, you know, openness to working with us to see to do the right thing, it seems like.
And did you all track at all what kind of services are offered in these municipalities for people who are homeless?
We haven't done that as of yet, although we have started to reach out to some homeless shelters to see if these panhandling ordinances have been affecting the people that they are providing services to.
And I want to ask one more question. Why now? Were you hearing that the people who were panhandling in these cities were being targeted more?
Well, you know, we don't have any specific intakes yet about a city enforcing a panhandling ordinance. I think overall it was at the organization of our partner, the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, and they organized this campaign to get these panhandling ordinances off the books across the country. You know, again, I mentioned there was 18 organizations in 12 states that joined this campaign.
Well, as I said before we move on, this is really something that's starting to pop up again around the country, even in some cities that had a liberal stance on this. So it will be interesting to see what response you get.
We look forward to it.
Okay, we're going to move on to another issue now, which is called Housing Not Handcuffs campaign. Talk to me about that.
So, Zakiya?
Go ahead.
So the Housing Not Handcuffs campaign is, you know, part of this effort of panhandling, and it's really to get at the source of homelessness instead of only looking at the symptoms. So instead of you know, scooting people along for asking for money, you would instead, for example, do what Philadelphia, Pennsylvania did recently by opening part of a downtown subway station, which was abandoned, but they opened it up as a service provider for use as a day shelter. And that gets at the source of homelessness, provides people with shelter and services, and is much better than, you know, hiding this problem under the rug.
This all seems to tie into what is really a major issue, especially going into the midterm elections. But this has been for at least the past 4 or 5 years, criminal justice reform, a real serious push. And this seems to play into that, that so much now is being criminalized, especially issues surrounding poverty, people who don't have housing or jobs. And instead of dealing with it as a social issue, it's being dealt with as a criminal issue. How much are you seeing that in terms of the work you're doing?
I think you've really hit it on the head there, Dwayne. The criminal justice system, you know, there's a lot to talk about, so I'll mention a few points. The criminal justice system in America, and, you know, in Mississippi included, really is different for people who have, you know, say even an extra $500 or $600 to pay a traffic ticket versus somebody that doesn't. And the very stark difference is that if you don't have money to pay for a $500 traffic ticket, you may stay in jail for weeks or months. And closing those disparities to have the criminal justice system work for everyone, poor and people with money alike, is something that we're focused on and something that America should be focused on.
Right. I had a guest recently associated with the fight against opioid addiction, Stand Up Mississippi, and this was one of the issues she was talking about. They want to start approaching the courts about not criminalizing people with fines, people who have these addictions. So this seems to be a coordinated, I shouldn't say coordinated, because it's not necessarily yet coordinated across different groups, but it is an issue which is the focus of a lot of people who are dealing with issues that are becoming criminalized.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think that this issue is something that, you know, for law enforcement and the, you know, ACLU, oftentimes we're on opposite sides of the issue, but for purposes of reforming the criminal justice system, there may be some overlap here with sheriffs and the ACLU. You know, sheriffs oftentimes and police departments oftentimes have to deal with mentally ill people, with poor people, who are better served in social services than in the criminal justice system.
It's interesting. I heard a candidate, I think maybe in Florida today, comparing the cost of jailing someone for 1 year as opposed to what they're spending in early education. And the cost was drastic. It was like $7,500 a year for a student early on, as opposed to $30,000 a year later. Their theory being that if you spent more money at the beginning, it took more time to try to deal with these issues at the beginning, you'd have far fewer people who ended up in the criminal justice system.
That's a great point. There's many reasons to reform the criminal justice system from a justice standpoint, from a fairness standpoint, and also from a monetary standpoint, as you just pointed out.
Okay, we are going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with the folks from the ACLU of Mississippi. Don't go anywhere.
This is Dr. Donna Antoine Levine with Jackson State University School of Public Health, Jackson Heart Study Community Outreach Center. Saturday, February 25th, 8:30 a.m., Jackson Heart Study's 17th Annual Celebration of Life, a town hall meeting, is scheduled at the Jackson Medical Mall Center Stage. Enter Bailey Avenue Gate. We want to hear your thoughts about Jackson Heart Study's future. Experienced facilitators and note takers will be present. For more information, Marty Fortenberry, 601-979-8736. Wear a touch of red.
Cool and Current WJSU wants to hear from you. While we do our best to provide you with great quality jazz and blues programming, we realize that things can change. We want to change with you so that you don't change the station. We're all ears. Have a programming suggestion or request? Any likes or dislikes? Emails can be sent to wjsufm@jsums.edu. That's wjsufm@jsums.edu.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Full Spectrum on Cool and Current WJSU. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. We're talking with some of the folks from the ACLU of Mississippi, Legal Director Joshua Tom, who's been doing most of the talking so far, Staff Attorney Landon Timms, and Director of Communications and Advocacy, Zakiya Summers Harley. Let's turn to the issue of social media and the Mississippi Department of Correction. I find this one really interesting. Go ahead. Tell listeners about this.
All right, Dwayne. We recently received some intake.
Pull that mic a little closer to you, Landon.
Sorry. Is this better?
Yeah, much better.
Some individuals contacted us through our online legal intake system, and these individuals have family members who are incarcerated within the Mississippi Department of Corrections, and they have concerns with how MDOC is being run, and they voiced those concerns on MDOC's Facebook page. MDOC claims that it's, you know, their official Facebook page, and they appreciate comments. Well, these individuals were later blocked for being critical of the MDOC, and they reached out to us, and, you know, we did some research on the matter, and we ended up filing a demand letter, or sending them a demand letter, letting them know that that practice was unconstitutional.
This sounds really familiar to me. The President of the United States,
yes,
just went through this, right, with the courts because he was blocking people from his Twitter page, and the court said you can't do that.
Absolutely.
Is it different, though? I know this had something to do with him being the President of the United States, but I would think because they're a state institution, some of the same issues that were cited by the courts in the case of the president would be relevant here.
Absolutely. It's not necessarily that it's the president and this is a government agency, it's the forum. Any sort of government agency or government official, if they open up a forum, then the law applies in that way. Here it's a limited public forum compared to a traditional public forum like sidewalks and, you know, public parks. A designated public forum is a forum that the government opens up to speech. And in this sense, the MDOC or President Trump, they opened up their accounts, Twitter accounts, Facebook pages to speech. And that's how they're similar.
You know, I have to ask you, Landon, do you think we're reaching some kind of critical threshold here when it comes to social media? Because there are a lot of issues starting to arise out of this. The president, just in the past couple of days, starting to make a lot of criticism toward Facebook, saying that they are intentionally manipulating conservative voices on their sites. He's making this in general about, I think, also other social media sites. And it is a new, a new horizon here, a new world in terms of social media. So this is the wheelhouse of the ACLU, which is freedom of speech.
It is.
Where are we now, especially when it comes to social media?
Well, I'll quote a Supreme Court case from last year, Packingham versus North Carolina. The Supreme Court said that social media is the new public square, and it is the main place for people to exchange views these days. So I think going forward, we'll see a lot of issues as far as First Amendment and social media in regards to the government.
And yet you hear, which I found interesting, you hear a lot of people expecting Facebook to block certain things. Most notably, there was a lot of fake news apparently planted by the Russians in order to manipulate the election. And it seems that even members of Congress are critical of Facebook for not taking some of that down. And then it seems to start crossing into a gray area about offensive speech and people expecting Facebook to block offensive speech, which seems to me to start bordering in this area of interfering with certain people's freedom of speech. So where do you see this going, especially the participation of the courts in this?
Well, offensive speech is protected by the First Amendment. So hopefully the courts aren't going to force Facebook to, you know, block offensive speech. I know Facebook has its own terms of service in that regard. I think they block profanity and things of that nature, but you know, the First Amendment allows people to speak their mind, and along with that freedom is, you know, the fact that you might be offended by speech.
Okay, and I'll give you an example of somebody who was blocked, I think, from a couple of sites, Alex Jones. And he was most notably known for saying that the shootings, the school shootings in Connecticut, I believe, were fake, mm-hmm. that they didn't happen. The parents sued him. Where is the line on free speech? Did he have a right to say that?
I don't think you can, you know, speak libel or slander anyone, but I mean, you can absolutely lie for, you know, that's considered free speech. I don't necessarily know the facts of, you know, Alex Jones, how that goes.
And Dwayne, I think this is the key. I think the distinction that we have to make here is government versus public. And so according to the First Amendment, the government cannot restrict your speech. The government can be any governmental official or any governmental entity. But for Alex Jones or for Zakiya Summers or Dwayne Doty, if you are making speech that would seem discriminatory or derogatory on a social media platform like Facebook, if Facebook has a policy around how that speech is censored, then they have every right to hide that. Because that's their own corporate policy. Facebook is not a governmental entity. It's a private entity that's owned by, you know, a billionaire or several mm-hmm. millionaires or whatever. And so it's different when it's President Trump, who is, you know, the top CEO of the country, saying in his position, saying that you can't make a comment on my Twitter page when he is a governmental official. If it's something that's even critical of a governmental official or a governmental entity, it's still protected speech. The government cannot restrict something just because they don't like what you're saying.
And in the case of these families who are criticizing MDOC, where would, if not for this venue, what would the venue be? Would you have to write to whoever it is that oversees the MDOC? It's an interesting case because, as you said, this which this is Landon, the first time I heard this about the judge saying this is the new town square, which, as far as I know, seems to be true of Facebook and Twitter. So it's interesting to me that they have to be able to take this criticism, and it's not just blocking free speech. It's almost like suppressing information that might be getting out there about wrongdoing that could be going on in these institutions.
Yes, not only that, but, you know, the Facebook page actually allows the citizens to interact with each other. So without that, they would usually, you know, only have the telephone to call MDOC and criticize them that way. And not only hiding comments, but actually restricting their access to the Facebook page is akin to, you know, not allowing them in the town square.
All right. We've got to take one more break. We'll be right back. We're talking with the folks from the ACLU of Mississippi. Stick around.
Support of this program is made in part by Griffith Financial Services, helping Jacksonians with their retirement and life plans, as well as critical, chronic, and terminal illness protection. Griffith Financial Services is available at 800-361-6542 or griffithfinancialservices.com. For a consultation today, the More tab is at your fingertips.
Welcome back to The Full Spectrum on Cool and Current WJSU. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty, and we're talking with Legal Director Joshua Tom, Staff Attorney Landon Timms, and Director of Communications and Advocacy, Zakiya Summers Harley. They're with the ACLU of Mississippi, and we are very happy to have you here. We have a few minutes left, and we want to talk about an art competition called the Fight for Freedom Art Competition. Tell us all about it, Zakiya.
Absolutely. So As the listeners just heard from our legal team, we're doing some great work out of the ACLU of Mississippi. Our mission is to protect, defend, and promote your civil liberties and your civil rights, and that's for all Mississippians. And in order for us to do what we do, we need funds. We don't get any governmental funds to help us with our budget. Everything is given to us through grants or donations. And so this art competition actually is the showcase to our upcoming fundraiser. And the name of our fundraiser is Fight for Freedom. It's going to be on Monday, September 24th at the Mississippi Museum of Art in downtown Jackson. The doors will open at 5. We'll start at 5:30. And what we did was we put out a call for submissions from what we're calling art activists to tell us what freedom means to them. We have two categories, creative writing and visual art. In our creative writing category, that can be an essay, a poem, or a spoken word. And in visual art, it's any kind of medium, graphic design, quilting, painting, anything that you can think of in terms of visual art. We are very excited about the number of submissions that we received. We received about 19 submissions. And so what will happen from here is that we will select those that will be showcased at the art museum. So folks will get an opportunity to hear from our creative writing art activists, plus see some of the pieces from the visual art activists. Our silent auction will also include several pieces that people can bid on, and we're going to have the Southern Brass Band. So it should be a very, very exciting event. We invite everybody to come out.
Is that the Southern Comfort?
That is the Southern Comfort Brass Band. That's right.
I know Gerard would be all on me if I didn't get that comfort in there.
That's right.
And let me ask you this. I see that the categories you had it open to were two age categories, 16 to 18 and then 18 and up. And I'm just wondering the quality of work you received from that 16 to 18 group. How aware of are they of some of these social issues going on?
You know, what's interesting, Duane, is that without looking at the application, I can't tell if a piece is from a high school student or if it's from an adult artist. The pieces are that good.
Wow.
They are very technical, and there are all kinds of interpretations of what freedom means to them. It's not just your, you know, ordinary flag, you know, when you think of freedom or, you know, war or something like that, or being behind bars. I mean, it's we have a quilt of, you know, crosses. We have a depiction of Childish Gambino's video, an art piece, which is absolutely beautiful. We have
This Is America. You're talking about the
This Is America video. We have another drawing or painting of a fist raised in the air, and so it's all kinds of art, and it's so beautiful. And I just can't wait for people to see it. And then for those who do come to the event, we won't actually know who the winner will be from our visual art, because the people who come to the event will rank those pieces. And so we'll announce who the winner will be from the visual art category during the event. So that's very exciting.
Well, that is very exciting. And I'll wrap up by saying this week was the 50th anniversary of the demonstrations that took place at the Democratic Convention in Chicago. I remember growing up during that time. And it's amazing that there seems to be a new awakening of advocacy. It's great to hear that that 16 to 18-year-old group is taking part in that. Legal Director Joshua Tom, Staff Attorney Landon Timms, and Director of Communications and Advocacy, Zakiya Summers-Harley. I want to thank you all for joining us. Keep me posted about what's happening with your demand letter. You all are demanding this month, and good for you.
That's right.
All right. Well, I want to thank our listeners for tuning in today. That's our show. Don't forget to catch Metro Morning Live with Rob J tomorrow at 7 and again at 10 on JSU TV channel, Comcast Channel 14. You can catch their live stream on Facebook. Just type in Jackson State TV one word. We'll be back tomorrow at 4 with more of the Full Spectrum right here on FM 88.5. You can catch our live stream on WJSU.org. Coming up next, Latin Jazz with your host, Dale Morris. Have a great evening.